Lebanon's March 14th coalition gets down to business to form a new government after sweeping last weekend's elections. Professor of History at the Lebanese American University in Byblos, Habib Malik, argues that just days before the polls, Hezbollah upped its bellicose rhetoric in an effort to lose the elections. I asked him to explain.
Well, not exactly, but I'm simply trying to interpret the heightening of the rhetoric. Somewhere, Hezbollah may have concluded that it is safer and better for them to actually remain in the opposition. It's less of a burden, and they're less in the limelight, and not so much subject to, being accused of essentially running or monopolizing the Lebanese government. So that was my feeling, and then the repercussions of those public statements by Hezbollah in the ranks of their Christian partners, namely the followers of General Aoun, Michel Aoun, were very negative, and that weakened Aoun. And so one wonders if Hezbollah also wanted a kind of strong Christian partner to emerge from these elections. But I should also add that it's not just Hezbollah. It's a much, much broader coalition that was out to weaken General Aoun and the policy line that he stands for.
Christians went into these elections, as we've been saying, very divided between those who were allied with Hezbollah, like General Michel Aoun, and those who were allied with the Saad Hariri camp March 14th. How did Christians come out of these elections?
Well, the divisions you mentioned are absolutely accurate, and that, in fact, leads me to characterize the elections that just ended in Lebanon as really a contest between two sets of fears. On the one hand, because really the only contest, electoral contest that occurred, did occur in Christian areas. In the Sunni and Shiite areas, the results were pretty much known in advance. There was no real contest there. But the actual competition occurred in Christian areas. And there, I think, what was at stake was two sets of rival fears. The March 14 group played up the fear of Hezbollah and the fear of Hezbollah's arms, its Iranian connections, its desire to turn Lebanon into a confrontation state, etc., etc. And that, as I said, Hezbollah's public statements the last 10 days before the elections actually played into that and heightened those fears. So that's one set of fears. Another set of fears that the opposition to the March 14 played up was fears of naturalizing 400,000 plus Palestinian refugees in Lebanon, the vast majority of whom are Sunni Muslims. You know, with all that entails in terms of strengthening the Sunnis, strengthening Saudi Arabia's hand here, strengthening perhaps Wahhabism, which is the radical version of Sunni Islam, as opposed to all the fears from Iran and the radicalism of the Shiites. So there were two sets of opposing fears tugging at the Christians, and the results show that the fears of Hezbollah prevailed over the fears of naturalizing the Palestinians and upsetting the delicate demographic balance. That's the way I would read it in terms of where the Christians ended up with the results. You're right about saying the Christians entered these elections divided. They emerged from these elections still divided. One thing that has happened, General Aoun may still have more or less the same numbers of parliamentary seats that he had before the elections, but he will now be deprived of being able to claim that he speaks for a majority Christian voice in the parliament.
How are the elections being regarded by Lebanon's neighbors, Syria and Israel?
Well, I think starting with Israel, we heard a lot of saber rattling from Israel before the elections, and I think all of that now needs to subside, because Hezbollah did not prevail, nor did the broader coalition of the opposition of which they were a part, and a new configuration of the internal alliances will have to happen in Lebanon. But what the Israelis and others call the moderate March 14 pro-Western alliance, I think, is the stronger one in Lebanon today. Whether all of this terminology makes any sense, that's a separate issue. But since they are stronger, this should allay some Israeli fears to some extent. Now, as far as Syria is concerned, I think the Syrians never really entertained any kind of return to prominence in Lebanon the way they had it before they exited in 2005. I think they still have their friends and allies in Lebanon, and I think they also are worrying about other issues. their stalled negotiations with Israel over the Golan, which were brokered by the Turks, their relations with the United States. They have been put on notice as being required to behave, as far as Lebanon is concerned, in order for their relations with the U.S. to improve. So I think they will wait and see and eventually take a position with respect to any emerging new Lebanese political formula. But neither Israel nor Syria right now are in any position to meddle directly in Lebanon, either by stirring the pot or causing even, you know, open confrontations.
Some of the challenges, we've mentioned some of them, facing the new parliament will include what to do with Hezbollah's weapons. They are the only militia to retain arms after Lebanon's 15-year war. They argue that they are defending Lebanon from Israel. But hasn't the army regained its authority sufficiently to render an independent militia unnecessary in Lebanon today?
No, that is not a very accurate description of the situation, because implied in what you're saying is the possibility that one may wish to set the army against Hezbollah in order to take away their weapons. And that is a recipe for utter disaster in Lebanon. And nobody wants that. Neither the March 14 people are going to unleash the army on Hezbollah, nor anybody in the opposition is going to condone that. So that's pretty much a non-starter unless somebody wants to wreck Lebanon. No, I think the issue of the arms of Hezbollah will certainly remain, and it'll be a thorny issue. And its solution before the elections, as well as after the elections, is not a Lebanese solution. It's a regional and international solution. It has to probably await some kind of deal emerging from a rapprochement between Washington and Tehran. And that's the only conceivable way in which Hezbollah's arms would be somehow dealt with or neutralized. Unleashing the Lebanese army is suicide for Lebanon. Attacking Hezbollah from the outside, as happened in 2006 by Israel, is not in the cards today, because I think both sides, Hezbollah and Israel, are deterred offensively. I mean, Hezbollah has a defensive capability, but will not provoke Israel and will not give Israel a pretext to attack. And I think the Israelis want one less headache and are not interested in going for another repeat of the 2006 adventure, which was inconclusive. So really, any solution for Hezbollah's arms is not going to happen through internal dialogue, as we have seen in Lebanon before. That internal dialogue is useful, I think, but for other reasons. It gets people together, they flesh out issues, they give the appearance that they're compromising and so forth. All of that makes sense in the, you know, in the complicated choreography of Lebanese politics, but it's not going to resolve the issue of Hezbollah's arms. That is only going to occur when something happens regionally and internationally between the United States and Iran. Hezbollah also is able to read the writing on the wall, and they realize that with the coming of a new American administration, there seems to be a desire to engage Syria and Iran, to open up to Syria and Iran for eventually some kind of a deal, and that war on Iran, as some in Israel have been trying to promote, is really a remote possibility and not where American thinking is at right now. So all of this is pretty well known to Hezbollah, and I think they're trying to position themselves in the present complicated Lebanese formula so that they can retain their arms and their strength until some kind of a larger deal or grand bargain occurs, and then they'll have to play by those rules.
Another challenge is Lebanon's relationship with Syria, which held the reins in Lebanon for 3 decades and has been blamed by some for the 2005 assassination of former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri. What is the status now of diplomatic relations between the two countries?
Well, there has been, for the first time ever, an exchange of ambassadors between Damascus and Beirut. And the embassies are opened, and there are now functioning diplomatic relations between the two countries, which never happened before. So that, in a sense, marks a new departure in Syria's relations with Lebanon in terms of international diplomacy. Now Syria officially recognizes Lebanon's independence as a sovereign country. Before, all of this was very ambiguous, vague territory, subsumed under grandiose language of brotherhood and proximity and special relationship, etc., all of these terms which really amounted to fig leaves for Syrian domination. Right now we have official diplomatic channels, and I think this is good and an important improvement. The other thing I would say is that the Syrian departure from Lebanon, April 26, 2005, the departure of their physical visible presence, namely their army from Lebanon, that's not about to be reversed anytime soon. I don't think the Syrians are going to be sending their army back into Lebanon anytime soon under any circumstances. That doesn't mean, however, that Syria doesn't have friends and allies and influence in Lebanon. Of course it does. That will continue. But the Syrians, I think, will take a wait-and-see attitude right now in order to see the kind of political alliances that emerge. And they'll try to play on the internal contradictions of those alliances to strengthen their hand internally, which is a very familiar game that has been played in the past. But it's all now being done, you know, sort of under the watchful eye of official diplomatic recognition and the acceptance of that by the international community.
Another outstanding issue, of course, between Syria and Lebanon is the demarcation of the border between the two countries, and in particular, ownership of the Sheba Farms area in southern Lebanon on the frontier with Israel. Why such foot dragging to arrive at a final demarcation?
Well, because the Syrians, once they do officially sign a recognition by them at the United Nations that the Sheba Farms are, in fact, Lebanese territory, they've said that orally, but they haven't committed that on paper to the United Nations. Once they do that, then an avenue for a diplomatic solution of the Sheba problem will be opened, and negotiations could lead to Israel yielding the Sheba Farms to the UN, and then from there, the UN could run the area until the issue of final ownership of those farms is resolved between Syria and Lebanon. Now, this is one avenue that would diffuse a lot of the tension, but it would mean that Syria has turned its back on its principal ally in Lebanon, namely Hezbollah, whose arms and whose whole resistance posture reduces itself to date pretty much to liberating Sheba and stopping the Israeli overflight and liberating the regions in Kfar Shuba, around Sheba. So if you set that problem on a diplomatic track of solution, you're basically undercutting your own ally in Lebanon. I don't think the Syrians are in a great hurry to lose one of their principal cards, which would be their relations with Hezbollah. On the relations of Lebanon and Syria, I mean, there are many issues still. There is that porous border, the long border between Lebanon and Syria, which needs to be controlled for smuggling and other purposes. There is the issue of Lebanese prisoners, some say in the thousands, but certainly in the hundreds, that are still languishing in Syrian prisons and whose status is unknown at this point. So that needs to be resolved as well. So there are many issues between Lebanon and Syria. The diplomatic relations are an encouraging step. And let's see if the new government that emerges in Lebanon now with the March 14 majority, if it's going to be able to make any headway with the Syrians on these thorny, outstanding issues.
Dr. Habib Malik is a professor of history at the Lebanese American University in Byblos.